You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. I'm also the co-editor of Dunking with Wolves, the Timberwolves site on the Fansided Network. Today's episode is brought to you by Locker Room. Download the Locker Room app from the iOS App Store and find one of our Locked On rooms. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports. Happy Thursday, everybody. Happy Timberwolves victory. Victory Thursday. The Wolves beat the New York Knicks on Wednesday night, and we're going to talk all about it. This is the post-game podcast. We're going to talk game flow. We're going to talk this game is close down the stretch. The Wolves won by one, so there's plenty to talk about in terms of crunch time execution from the Wolves. We'll talk about the key takeaways overall from the game, and then we'll also look at individual studs and duds as well. So a packed show, packed post-game pod here today. This is only the 12th time we've been able to have a victory podcast, and that means we're going to make the most of it here today and try and pull out some really positive things from this one. And really, it's not that hard. It ended up being a really entertaining game, and the way that the Wolves won was a lot of fun too. So we'll get into all that here in just a second. As always, a reminder that you can subscribe to this podcast if you haven't already. And if you haven't already, what are you waiting for? You can follow on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the all new Odyssey app. That's AUDACY, the all new Odyssey app. Anywhere you get podcasts, you can also follow on Twitter at Locked On T Wolves. And at B Beacon. That's B Beacon, two B's, two E's, C-K-E-N. Okay, let's talk about how this one went down. It actually got off to a terrible start for the Timberwolves. They only scored 19 points in the first quarter. And talked about this on Wednesday's show, previewing the matchup with the Knicks, that New York is actually a top five defensive team in the league. And Tom Thibodeau's reputation as a defensive-minded coach, as a team whose defense has always competed. Well, that didn't follow him followed him to Minnesota, but it didn't come to fruition really outside of the one Jimmy Butler year with the Timberwolves. But I mean, he's taken a Knicks team that last season, I mean, they were largely lost, bottom five in offense, bottom 10. I think they were 23rd or 24th in defensive rating last year. And now this year they're top five, they're fourth in defensive rating coming into this game against the Wolves. And while their offense isn't great defensively, they've been quite good. And they were awesome early in this game. They were doubling Karl-Anthony Towns. They were collapsing on the paint, making life difficult for Wolves guards who drove. Ricky Rubio is having trouble scoring in the paint. Anthony Edwards wasn't effective early. Towns wasn't getting clean looks and wasn't very efficient early in the game. Malik Beasley was really hit and miss in the early stages of the game. So the Wolves scored 19 points in the first quarter. A lot of that was credit to the Knicks defense. The second quarter, things started to shift a little bit, and the Wolves had a nice run and ended up actually winning the quarter by six. They were down just one at halftime. They trailed by as many as 18 points early in the second quarter because their bench struggled so much early in this game. The Wolves did. And the Knicks couldn't miss from outside the arc. And this isn't a very good three-point shooting team either. They came into this game 29th in the NBA in three-point attempts per game. They're 11th in percentage, but they're 29th in attempts per game. And it's just not a massive part of what they do. Yet they were flamethrowing early in this game. And it ended up just being a one-point game at halftime. There was some pretty ugly basketball in the middle stages of this game. And then the third quarter was all Knicks. They won the quarter 30-20. The Wolves' defensive intensity kind of vanished for a stretch there. And outside of Jaden McDaniels, really, I mean, he was amazing in the third quarter. We'll talk a lot more about his game on the show today. But Jaden McDaniels was defending too. I mean, one-on-one, whoever he was matched up against, oftentimes it was Julius Randle, who obviously is a big dude and likes to just kind of bully ball people and likes to go ISO and just kind of go through guys. He couldn't do that against Jaden McDaniels. Jaden McDaniels was great. Offensively as well, he was comfortable putting the ball on the floor. He was catching and shooting from the corners extremely accurately in this game. And he was the bright spot of the third quarter. The Wolves ended up down 11 going to the fourth. And then the fourth quarter was all Anthony Edwards and Karl-Anthony Towns with a little bit of Malik Beasley and Jaden McDaniels kind of sprinkled in. The Wolves chipped away at this lead pretty quickly. They got it down to single figures or single digits, I should say, before the midway point. And then with 3 minutes left in this game, it was still a four-point game. With 3:12 left, Julius Randle made a shot to make this a four-point game. Nobody scored for another full minute until Anthony Edwards was fouled going to the basket. He made one of two free throws. The Wolves are down three with 2:17 left. And McDaniel stops Julius Randle on the other end Wolves come down. Edwards gets into the paint and scores. On the other end, Taj Gibson gets called on a questionable, or gets a foul call on a questionable call against Karl Anthony Towns. He splits two free throws. Now the Knicks are back up two. Ant scores on the other end. It's now a tie game. Karl Anthony Towns gets a piece of an Alfred, or I should say blocks an Alfred Payton shot in the paint. And then Taj Gibson tips it in. Wolves down two again. On the other end, Anthony Edwards again, and we'll talk a lot more about this in the takeaway section because I want to talk about what the Wolves did specifically to get Ant all of these opportunities. But Edwards is operating the pick and roll, gets into the paint. I believe it was Alfred Payton started to shade off of Malik Beasley to collapse onto Edwards in the paint, which the Knicks have been doing all game. And Ant kicked it directly to Beasley in the left slot. Beasley knocks down the three. The Wolves go up one with 37.8 left. Nobody else scores the rest of the game. The Wolves win by one. What did happen, though, in the final couple of possessions, it doesn't mean that nothing happened, but Anthony Edwards was guarding RJ Barrett. Barrett drove baseline. Edwards deflects the ball off of RJ Barrett's leg out of bounds. Wolves ball. So now with the Timberwolves inbounding, they have two timeouts, by the way. So this was actually, I think, the one mistake that Chris Finch made late in this game. They go to inbound the ball with 25 seconds left. The Knicks effectively have to foul at that point, right? The Knicks are down one, 25 seconds left. You're not going to let the Wolves run it down to, you know, to the buzzer. And at best case, the Knicks get the ball back with 1.5 seconds left and down three, right? So the Knicks would have had to foul. Instead of calling a timeout, the Wolves try and inbound the ball. Beasley turns it over right at midcourt. And the Knicks come back, don't call a timeout. They had one remaining at this point. Julius Randle shoots a tough step back and misses. The Wolves get the rebound. Towns gets the rebound. But for whatever reason, he tries to immediately shovel the ball to Malik Beasley, who's, I don't know, 4 feet away from him. Again, the Wolves have two timeouts. They're up one. Towns is also a good free throw shooter. The Knicks were going to foul him, right? I mean, all he needed to do is cover the ball so they couldn't get a jump ball, get fouled, and go to the free throw line on the other end of the floor. Instead, Towns tries to shovel it to Beasley. His arm gets hacked. They don't call foul and should have. And then the ball gets away from him. I think Payton is the one that jumped on it. They get the timeout. So now it's Knicks ball, 5 seconds left. And they call a timeout. The Wolves switch the action on the inbounds play. So Ricky Rubio comes out of the sideline out of bounds play guarding RJ Barrett. He and Karl Anthony Towns switch the action on the screen. And for a split second, they weren't going to switch. And then they switched. So now Towns is guarding RJ Barrett in isolation, the closing seconds up one. Towns forces him into a tough fall away mid-range jumper, gets a good contest on it. The shot falls off short. And Rubio grabs the rebound with about 1.5 seconds left and hoists it in the air so the Knicks don't even get a chance to foul. Wolves hold on by one. Outstanding communication between Towns and Rubio. Not sure what had been discussed in the huddle beforehand, but they almost messed it up. They recovered. Towns played great defense in isolation, and the Wolves held on to win. So outside of just a little bit of timeout mismanagement and then also those two turnovers, I guess the two turnovers in the last 20 seconds, the Beasley turnover at midcourt and then the Towns turnover right after the defensive rebound, the Wolves did almost kick this game away. Still, the execution was good enough, and I want to talk about that in key takeaways, that they held on to win this game. You can also bet that part of key takeaways is going to be the play of the Timberwolves rookies, McDaniels and Edwards. I want to break down each of their second halves that they had in this game here coming up next. So that'll be the full next segment. First, though, let's talk about a brand new podcast, which transparently I have not yet listened to. But from everything I hear, I am excited to tell you about it because I think you're really going to love it. It's called Death at the Wing. It's a sports documentary podcast hosted by Adam McKay. If you're not familiar with Adam, he's the writer and director of The Big Short, Vice, and Anchorman, one of my favorite movies of all time. In the 1980s, basketball saw players like Magic Johnson and Dr. J become household names, bringing a faster and flashier style of play that captivated TV audiences. But along the way to wealth and stardom, the excess of the 80s took its toll on the next generation of basketball. Never in the history of any sport have we seen so many who were ready to become stars face tragic deaths in such a short time frame. McKay is joined by sports journalists and experts who live through these moments in history to explore this overlooked phenomenon and the web of social, political, and cultural forces at play. If you love The Last Dance or 30 for 30s, I think you're going to love Death at the Wing. I cannot wait to listen to it. I'm going to listen to it this weekend for sure. Search for Death at the Wing wherever you get your podcasts to start listening. Get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app, A-U-D-A-C-Y, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get podcasts. Okay, let's talk key takeaways, and there are plenty from this one. Number one, first and foremost, Karl-Anthony Towns had a sneaky good game, and we'll talk about him in Studs and Duds, spoiler, but everybody after the game on Twitter, press conference, all that stuff, everybody wanted to talk about Anthony Edwards, Jaden McDaniels, and I'm going to, and for good reason. They were fantastic for much of the game. But Karl-Anthony Towns had the way I put it on Twitter was it was an underrated game from Karl-Anthony Towns. He finished this one with 18 and 17 on 18 shots. So not ultra efficient, but not terrible. But he had 6 assists, only 3 turnovers, did not really get into foul trouble. He picked up a couple quick fouls in the late third, early fourth quarter. But he was really good in this game. 17 rebounds. And recently, I talked about this on the show before, his rebound numbers were going down a little bit. I think he was more worried about his three-point shooting numbers that had been down and some of those things, been discouraged by not getting foul calls in the paint. But he had 5 of 7 games where he had single-digit rebounds not that long ago. And all of those 7 games were 10 or less rebounds. Actually, no, going back even further, he had a 9-game stretch where he didn't have more than 10 rebounds in a game. And of those 9 games, 6 of them, he had single-digit rebounds. Now over his last 4, he's had 12 or more rebounds every night, including a 15, a 16, and now a 17-rebound game, 18, 17, and 6 with 2 blocks. And again, foul trouble has been less of an issue for him of late. He also only committed the 3 turnovers, despite being double-teamed like crazy. You knew Tom Thibodeau was going to do what he could to take Towns out of this one, or at least make him make tough decisions, and Towns battled. The Knicks play 2 big men a lot, play two more traditional big men, whether it's Nerlens Noel and Julius Randle in the starting lineup. They bring in Taj Gibson off the bench, Obi Toppin to a lesser extent. But battling with Nerlens and Randle and Taj is not fun. And Towns, it should be the expectation, right, that he's going to do that he's going to get in there, that he's going to rebound, that he's going to battle, he's going to try and draw fouls, and when he can't, he's not going to complain, he's going to keep working hard. But we haven't always seen that. We've seen flashes, we more than flashes. We know Towns can do these things. But this was an example of a game where Towns simply, he just wanted it. And Taj Gibson was expecting that he could give Karl-Anthony Towns everything or anything he wanted to, and that Towns would at some point kind of fold up and complain and be like, hey, I'm not getting the call, so I'm just going to kind of take my ball and go home type of a thing. That didn't happen. Towns kept giving it back to Taj. They were tangled up a lot. The officials, I actually think this game was fairly well officiated because there weren't that many foul calls and it was consistent both ways. The Knicks ended up shooting 17 free throws. The Wolves attempted 19, but there weren't really all that many until the fourth quarter. It was a fairly officiated game. And they let the likes of Towns and Taj battle and Towns and Nerlens Noel battle. And I think that was the right call. And typically in those types of games, Towns succumbs to, and other teams are betting on this, right? They're expecting him to kind of fold up. He didn't do that in this game. He kept coming. He had 17 rebounds. Nobody else in this game had more than 12. On the Knicks, Julius Randle had 12. Besides those two guys, nobody else in the game had more than 8. I mean, those were the two guys grabbing the boards. And Towns held Nerlens Noel to 3 rebounds in 24 minutes. Taj was good and was effective against Towns because the way he plays and his lower center of gravity, but yet the ability to play big at the same time. And Towns did enough to get his team the victory. And I don't want that to get lost in the justifiable hype surrounding Jaden McDaniels and Anthony Edwards down the stretch of this game. So I really wanted to make sure to point that out. The next thing is the Wolves offense towards the end of the game. They just went straight Anthony Edwards pick and roll. That's what the Wolves did for like the whole second half of the fourth quarter. And it was effective. At one point, Jim Peterson said on Bally Sports North that, why have Ricky Rubio on the floor if you're just going to run the ball through Edwards consistently? And that's a fair point. His point was put Jalen Noel on the floor. I think at that point of the game, as much as I love Jalen Noel and I love Jim Peterson, and I think it was a fair point, the Wolves have kicked away so many games at the end that you need to have a point guard on the floor who has a pulse on the situation, can speed up, slow down. Anthony Edwards doesn't have that feel yet. Jalen Noel certainly does not have that feel So you needed somebody like Rubio there to help calm things down if needed. And also defensively, he's better than Jalen Noel defensively. He's every bit as good of a rebounder as Jalen Noel as well. So I understand why Rubio is on the court. Also, side note, not to get too off of this point, but I think it was Monday's show this week, I talked about end of quarter issues for the Wolves, and almost all of those problems have come with Rubio not on the floor. They've come with mostly with Jalen Noel and Anthony Edwards in the backcourt. And so those execution, you know, late clock execution moments, and at the end of the game, it's magnified even more than at the end of the, say, the first or second quarter. I understand why Ricky Rubio is on the floor. However, he didn't handle the ball very much. Anthony Edwards did such a good job. The Wolves kept going back to that well. And I've talked at length this year about how Ant has not been good in pick and roll as the ball handler. His points per possession have been well below league average. They've been in like the 35th to 40th percentile for most of the year. Whereas in isolation, he's top, you know, top quarter of the league as an isolation, you know, points per possession in isolation. But this was almost entirely pick and roll. And he was making the right decisions. There were one, maybe two times he could have deferred to Towns and it would have been a solid play. But instead he kept the ball himself, got to the basket. He made a couple of tough reverse layups. He got fouled once, made one of two free throws. And then on the biggest moment of the game, as the defense collapses, Edwards sees out of the corner of his eye, Malik Beasley, who's wide open in the slot, delivers a perfect pass to him. And that's not something we've always seen from Ant. He's had these stretches where he's gone, like, you know, he just kind of stops trying to play make. And then there's other stretches where he overdoes it. And that moment in this game, he played that exactly perfectly and delivered an on-time, on-target pass. Beasley knocks down the three. The Wolves go up one and don't relinquish that one-point lead. Just a great finish from Anthony Edwards. Also, as bad as he was defensively in the early part of the fourth quarter, late part of the third quarter, and he was bad. I mean, he lost guys in transition. He just was getting blown by, and this is, again, something we've seen consistently from Edwards. All of a sudden, he got two huge steals down the stretch in this game. Anticipation steals. One was jumping a passing lane. Another was he snuck up behind, I believe it was Peyton, after an offensive rebound, and just tapped the ball away from him from behind, caught up to the ball in the open floor, and got a dunk out of it. And those were massive tide-turning plays. Remember, he did that the other night against Brooklyn. He stole the ball and got an extra bucket, an extra possession late in the game against the Nets. To this point, he hasn't gotten too gamble happy with stuff like that. It's mostly been measured and again, anticipation more than anything. So as long as that continues to be the case, those types of plays at that juncture of the game are massive. If you can grab one or two extra possessions in a one-point game, there's a huge difference that can make. So his play down the stretch, and it was rocky at times in this game, especially defensively, but his play down the stretch of this one was fantastic. The last thing in terms of key takeaways, as much as the execution was not great at the end of the game between the Beasley turnover, the Towns turnover, both in the final 20 seconds, not calling timeout before the Beasley turnover, and then not calling timeout before the Towns turnover, which are, of course, both easy to say in hindsight, but in the moment, it's like, okay, you got two timeouts, just use them. Outside of those issues, the Wolves executed down the stretch. And I know those are major issues, and we could easily be talking about how could the Wolves, you know, kick this game away in the final 20 seconds with these turnovers. If the Knicks, you know, if RJ Barrett makes that final jumper, why did they switch? Why was Towns guarding RJ Barrett? But that's not the only thing, right? I mean, the Wolves had to get those rebounds in the first place. Ant had to knock the ball off of Barrett's leg on that possession out of bounds. Towns had to secure the rebound before he then ultimately lost it. The before the Beasley turnover as well, the Wolves had a strong defensive possession. So the Wolves actually were defending well, and they rebounded well. They were holding the Knicks to one and done throughout the latter part of the fourth quarter as they were finishing their comeback. The Wolves rebounding was actually quite good in this game. And I mean, those are the positive takeaways, right? The total execution wasn't perfect, and it rarely is for anybody. But they did enough defensively and rebounding the ball, and Ant did enough offensively. Beasley knocked down the open jumper that in total, the late game execution, it's really hard to pick it apart too much. And I was really pleased with how that all went down at the end of the game. And I mean, the Knicks aren't a great offensive team, but they're a decent rebounding team, and they're a good defensive team. And they're, you know, they were above 500 coming into this game. So this was a nice victory for the Wolves, and they did a great job overall down the stretch in this one. So kudos to Chris Finch and the players for being able to pull this one out. I want to finish today's show by talking about individual studs and duds from this one. And there were a couple of interesting kind of middle of the road performances that I want to dig into as well. So that's all upcoming. First, though, let's talk about betonline.ag. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. And baseball starts today. April 1st is opening day in Major League Baseball. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today. Receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with the promo code LOCKEDON. That's a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with the promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Also, today is the big day. It is the championship for Built Bar Madness. We've been talking about Built Bar Madness throughout the month of March. Now it's April 1st. So it's time to crown this year's the best Built Bar, I guess, the winning Built Bar. We've been talking about Built Bar now for over a year. It's the amazing low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber, amazing-tasting protein bar. There's 100% chocolate on all bars. They all taste exactly like a candy bar, and I eat at least one daily. It's now time to find out which Built Bar is the king of them all. Today's matchup is the championship. As of this recording, Cookie Dough Chunk is in the championship. I do not yet have the results on Coconut Brownie Chunk and Mint Brownie to find out who is in the championship facing off against Cookie Dough Chunk. My money's on Coconut Brownie Chunk. So we're going to get a chunk versus chunk championship. Cookie Dough Chunk versus Coconut Brownie Chunk. Absolutely, those are two of the best flavors. I'm voting Coconut Brownie Chunk, as should you. And if you haven't tried it, get over to builtbar.com and get yourself some. You can also follow on Twitter @bar_built. You can check out the bracket, find out how it all went down, both at builtbar.com and also @bar_built. Remember to use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order. That's LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order at builtbar.com. Check back and see who ends up winning the championship that we've been talking about all month at builtbar.com. Now that we're down to a final four in March Madness, it is the perfect time to start listening to the Locked On NBA Draft podcast if you're not already. You can get more analysis on all the top prospects available in this year's draft with the Locked On NBA Draft podcast, scouting reports, draft rumors, mock drafts, and full coverage of March Madness 4 days a week from credentialed draft experts. Follow the Locked On NBA Draft podcast on the Odyssey app, AUDACY, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get podcasts. Okay, let's talk about individual studs and duds from this game. Number one, the best player on the floor, start to finish for the Timberwolves in this one, was Jaden McDaniels. Hands down. He had 18 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 7 of 13 shooting. So shot better than 50% from the floor, 4 of 9 outside the arc. So just a hair under 50%. The 18 points were a career high. His previous career high was 12, I believe. It was 14, actually. Since he's entered the starting lineup, in fact, he's scored double figures each of the last 4 nights. His previous career high, he hit 14 twice and had 13 last time out against Brooklyn, had 18, 5-3 in this one. Didn't have any blocks, didn't have any steals, but was phenomenal defensively. A lot of it was against Julius Randle, who ended up with a good night, 26, 12, and 6, 11 of 20 shooting, but he did turn it over 4 times, and he was forced to defer to teammates multiple times in this game. There was one really nice pass that Randle had, where Elfrid Payton made a 3. That doesn't happen very often, but Jaden McDaniels, it was that play in particular was a great example of Jaden McDaniels' length and his ability to stay squared up to the ball against a much bigger, stronger player in Julius Randle. He forced him to throw a cross-court pass to a bad three-point shooter in Elfrid Payton, who made a shot. And there were a couple different examples of that where McDaniels just did a great job staying in front. He was fantastic defensively. Chris Finch said after the game that he doesn't think he's ever seen, this is almost a verbatim quote, doesn't think he's ever seen another 19-year-old have the defensive impact as a rookie like Jaden McDaniels has had to this point in this season when he's been on the floor. He's been really, really good. And it's to the point where, I mean, it's not crazy to think that he's the guy moving forward at the four. And I know there's some folks who have been on that bandwagon for a little while. It's taken me a little longer to come around because he just hasn't shown much offensively. But he scored 18 points in this one. And he's starting to look like he's ready to be more assertive. The Wolves aren't necessarily calling plays for him still or yet. But he is putting the ball on the floor and trying to be a little bit more aggressive. And that's a really positive development. He was just really good in this game. His athleticism was on display. His defense is still the most impressive thing. And his shooting touch, he was a good shooter in college and everybody thought he could shoot coming out of high school as a five-star recruit, but he can really shoot the ball. And if he's going to sniff 40% from three, continue to add strength and add to his offensive game, I mean, he's got more than starting caliber potential. I think his floor at this point is a functional starter in this league. And it's looking, I'm trying not to overreact to one game, but he was the best player on the floor for the Timberwolves in this one, arguably in the game, maybe this side of Julius Randle. He was really, really good. It's very hard to understate that. Karl Anthony Towns, for me, is the second best player on the floor for the Wolves. 18, 17, and 6, two blocks, only three turnovers, 7 of 18 shooting, 2 of 7 outside the arc. So the difference there is Towns just didn't make threes. He had at least one rim in and out. He's been a little bit up and down shooting the three this season, but this was a good game and he battled down low. I mean, in the paint, he shot what? He was 5 of 11, which isn't great, but it was tough sledding for him. I mean, the Knicks are a good defensive team. They've got several good defenders. I mean, Nerlens Noel is no slouch. He's a good defender. Taj Gibson is a good defender. We know that. Towns only did attempt two free throws. Wasn't entirely his fault. Probably could have gotten to the line a couple more times. And, but again, as I said earlier, it was really just that he battled consistently from start to finish in this game, led the team with 40 minutes played. And, I guess a little bit of an ode to Tibbs to have Towns on the floor for 40 minutes, but he was really good. Really, really good. The third stud for me in this game, the Wolves bench was quiet. It can't really come from anyone off the bench. I mean, Naz Reid had 6 points, led the bench in scoring. Jalen only had 4. The Wolves total as a team had 13 bench points total for the game. They had 3 guys play 5 or less minutes. Wancho, Jake Lehman, and Jared Culver each barely saw the floor. Jared Vanderbilt did not play. Ricky Rubio had a quiet game in the starting lineup. He was solid, 9-7, only one turnover. So none of those guys can make the stud list. So it's between Malik Beasley and Anthony Edwards, and you have to go with Anthony Edwards because of how the game finished. And his line was great. 24 points, 3 assists, 3 steals, 3 blocks in this game. He only had 2 rebounds, which isn't great, in 36 minutes, but I can't harp on that. When he has 3 steals, 3 blocks, and 3 assists, he did also have 3 turnovers and also 3 fouls, which is kind of weird. Basically, 3s across the board. But he was a team best plus 14 on the game. 9 of 16 shooting, 2 of 7 outside the arc, same mark as Towns. He did attempt 5 free throws, which was the second most of anyone on the team, and was just really, really good down the stretch. And that, as we've already talked about, is what really mattered in this one. Solid defensively when it mattered in the final minutes, and scored, initiated offense, distributed, did all those things well. Shout out to Malik Beasley as well, 20 points on 9 shots after having 2 really bad games, just put really simply, bad games, his first 2 games from his suspension. He shot the ball 9 times, 8 of them were threes. He was 5 of 8 on threes and 0 of 1 inside the arc, 5 of 6 at the free throw line. So he did draw some fouls. He did put the ball in the floor a couple of times. They just resulted in foul calls instead of baskets. 20 points in 32 minutes. He didn't do much else. 1 rebound, 1 steal, 1 block in this game. And he was a minus 12, the only starter with a negative plus minus, and actually the only player on the Wolves with, or easily the worst plus minus mark on the Wolves. I thought Chris Finch, what he tried to do, which was basically spell Malik Beasley a couple of times so he played Jalen Noel in Beasley's place with the starters to try and get a few extra moments of rest for Beasley as he's still working back from his 12-game suspension, getting back into game shape. And I thought it mostly worked. And actually, I mean, Jalen was a plus 5 in 21 minutes and Beasley was a minus 12. So that's one of the reasons this is actually a pretty good example of single game plus minus kind of telling a story. A lot of times there's too much noise and it's not really all that accurate. But if you go back and watch this game, if you go and look at the game flow here, the actual substitution pattern, Noel was on the floor with starters a good chunk of the time, whereas as Beasley obviously was as well. But Beasley with the starters was not as effective as Noel with the starters in this game. That's obviously not going to always be the case. Another weird thing that happened was Noel attempted 7 shots in this game. All of them were twos. He didn't attempt a single three. So that was also weird. But Beasley was solid in this game, 20 points and 9 shots. Wolves will take that every night of the week. Minus 12 in the plus minus column or not, he was solid in this one. But the 3 studs for me in this one are Jaden McDaniels, Karl-Anthony Towns, Anthony Edwards, in that order. And duds for this game, hard to single somebody out because there were so many guys that played such short minutes. So I'm going to give it to the entire bench. I'm cheating a little bit here. But the bench as a whole was 0-4 outside the arc. Somehow only attempted 4 threes. They were 0-4 outside the arc. The bench as a whole made 5 total shots. The bench was 5 of 22 shooting on the night and scored a total of 13 points. Jalen Noel somehow had 6 rebounds, 3 assists, and 2 steals in 21 minutes, excuse me. So he did a few other things. Naz Reid was quiet, 6-3. Didn't have a very good first half. Didn't do much in the second half because Finch went back to Towns when things looked like they could get out of control early in the fourth quarter. So disappointing night for the bench as a whole. I think the Wolves, you know, they're obviously not going to be able to play all their starters 30 plus minutes every night. Or I guess the trio that were the studs in this game all played 36 plus minutes. McDaniels and Edwards both played 36. Towns played 40. And it was enough to get the win. So we'll see how much of that Finch does moving forward. Now, these are all younger players, especially McDaniels and Edwards. So it's not like he's going to run them into the ground yet. But it wouldn't surprise me if Finch does that just to really get these guys some experience closing games, to find out what he really has, and then go from there. D'Angelo Russell, of course, was at the game on the bench. And he's progressing to some 5-on-5 action and is partaking in parts of practice now that are live contact type drills. And so, you know, Finch seems to think that Russell's getting a lot closer based on his comments pregame. So hopefully we do see D'Angelo Russell soon and get an even better sense for what this team really might look like when it's fully realized. But all things considered, this was an exciting win. Yes, it's a 500 team, and yes, they won by one, and yes, they turned it over twice in the final 20 seconds and easily could have lost. But how many games this year, especially earlier this season, could you say the reverse? The Wolves executed okay, but they turned it over in the final 20 seconds, or, you know, the ball bounced the wrong way and the opposing team got the offensive rebound and the putback. Right? I mean, every team wins and loses a handful of these a year, and it was finally the Wolves' turn to win one. And so I think looking at this game and taking the positives, the McDaniels positives, the Edwards positives, the somehow somewhat forgotten Towns positives, the Beasley 20 points on 9 shots, there were some real positive things to take from this game. And I mean, it's the sort of thing that gets us all looking forward to the next time out. The Wolves actually do have another winnable game on the schedule. I mean, that's at Memphis. This was one of those one game homestands. They're at Memphis on Friday night. They've really got to win that one. You know, winning 2 in a row for the first time since literally the first 2 games of the season would be massive. And then they go at Philadelphia on Saturday. So on a back to back. So winning in Memphis would be huge before coming back home for another, you know, a couple of more winnable games, including Sacramento on Monday. So, interesting schedule upcoming, a lot of road home, you know, bouncing back and forth. But as this team continues to get healthier, Okogie should be back soon. Russell should be back soon. These are the type of performances to see the Wolves hold on late that are really encouraging, that show growth. And yes, the Wolves are still the worst team in the league, but they're not going to be when this season's over. I really don't think they will be. All things considered, a good win, definitely positive takeaways. That's all we have for you today here on the show. We'll be back, of course, on Friday. We'll preview Wolves Grizzlies on Friday night. It's been a minute since we've seen Memphis. In fact, back since mid-January when they played the one game and then had the only game the Wolves had postponed because of COVID-19, when Iwancho had tested positive and Karl-Anthony Towns tested positive and Rubio was out for health and safety protocol reasons. You have to go all the way back to mid-January since the Wolves saw the Grizzlies, and things have changed with Memphis as well. Their roster's changed a little bit. They've been a little bit disappointing. So we'll talk about all that on Friday's show, among other things, of course. And then this weekend, we'll also have weekend pods again. Post-game pod Friday, post-game pod from Saturday. So we'll have, I don't know, we're looking at like 2.5 straight weeks worth of podcasts every day. So if you're not already following Lockdown Wolves wherever you get podcasts, this is your reminder. You can follow on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, the all new Odyssey app. It's Odyssey, AUDACY, the brand new Odyssey app, or anywhere else that you like to listen to podcasts. And you can also follow on Twitter, and please do, at Lockdown T Wolves, and also at B Beacon. That's B Beacon, 2 B's, 2 E's, CKEN. A reminder that this episode is brought to you by Locker Room. You can download the Locker Room app from the iOS App Store and find one of our Locked On Rooms, Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.